I'm ready. Good morning, everyone. I will call this regularly scheduled meeting of Story County Board of Supervisors for November 27th to order and ask that you all please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Public comment number one. This is the period when anybody can make comments on today's agenda if you would so like. Seeing no one moving immediately to the microphone, we'll move on. Consideration of minutes. We don't have minutes to consider today. Moving to consideration of personnel actions. Second, discussion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Passes. Consent agenda. I think just one addition, Shelley, over the original agenda that went out, and that's utility permit 1336.
Move approval.
Second, discussion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Public hearing items, none. Additional items, discussion and consideration of annual MHDD report for 11-12. And Deb, that's you. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well, thank you. And you?
Good, thanks.
Okay, this report is a requirement by the Department of Human Services to be turned in by December 1st of each year for the previous fiscal year. So you've seen these before. And what it is just a report that Gail and I worked on. We put into it just a synopsis of all of the goals and the reviews that we do with you on a semi-annual basis, the progress made on those goals. We have a section in here about stakeholder involvement, and the stakeholder involvement involves the Management Advisory Council, the Mental Health Criminal Justice Task Force, the Crisis Services Subcommittee, the Transition Advisory Committee, and then the Quality of Life Alliance. And so I've outlined the meetings that took place during fiscal year 12 and then folks who attended those meetings and kind of just the content of those meetings. So it shows that we do have involvement from various stakeholders throughout the year. Section 3 is just our provider network and scope of services, so which providers we utilized during fiscal year 12 and the services that we funded. Section 4 is actual expenditures, and so that's a supplement to the that I handed out to you goes into the report as well, and that's a form that the auditor's office completes for us, and they turn that into Department of Management, but then we have to include it in the annual report as well. Section 5 is our appeals, just a synopsis of appeals that we had over the course of the fiscal year. Section 6 talks about our quality assurance activities. And then Section 7 is waiting list information, which we did not have a waiting list in 12, so that section is short and sweet. And if you have any questions or comments, I will listen to those. Otherwise, as staff, I recommend approval of the report.
I'll move approval.
Second. Further discussion. Any questions for Deb?
Not at this time.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. It passes. Is that all we've got to do for you now to submit that?
Yes. Go. Yep, I'll get that email this afternoon.
Next is discussion consideration of asset funding priorities and funding allocations for 13-14. And still, Deb.
It's that time of year again. We have the asset allocation process ramping up here towards the end of December into the beginning of January. And one of the requirements for that process is that each funder in the process have priorities. And so these priorities will help the volunteers as they take a look at funding requests and help them and formulate their recommendations that go back to the funders later in January, early February. The priorities that are listed here, I'll go through them briefly. They haven't changed since last fiscal year. They seem to meet the things that the county has to manage and oversee. It's just important to note that the services must be available and accessible countywide. So we've got transportation and affordable housing, safety, health, and well-being of children and adults, and that would also include emergency response services, specifically in the case of disasters. Accessible medical services that will help people avoid out-of-home placement and institutional care, so we want people to be able to stay in the least restrictive environment as possible. And then prevention and early intervention services that will help deter situations that require more costly services. So any questions or comments on those?
When was the last time our priorities changed as a county?
We added the emergency response services 2 years ago.
Okay.
After the floods in 2010. But otherwise, they've stayed pretty much the same, and we typically have a more of an emphasis on individuals that are elderly, so that takes care of like the transportation and the medical care, the institutional kinds of services that we want to avoid, as well as individuals with disabilities. But then looking at the citizens, you know, countywide, we want to kind of be that safety net to have the services available to them in the event they need them, whether it's long-term or just on a situational basis.
Any holes in the asset process, something that we're not, that nobody views as a priority that needs to be?
I don't think so, Rick. The city's priorities tend to focus on the low to moderate income groups, and they have a lot of overlap with what we have in terms of making sure services are preventative and early intervention and providing for basic needs. Of course, government student bodies services have to focus on students and the needs of students, which we see that overlap, especially in the mental health arena when students are needing outpatient services. United Way's priority is just kind of a one sentence statement that says they want to be the safety net and catch all, you know, for services. Their three of their main priorities have to do with hunger, mental health, and used to be literacy, but it might be more of the financial ends of things now. So there is a lot of overlap with the priorities for each funder. And unless an agency comes forward with maybe a newer expanded service that they want to have considered, we might have to take a look then at what our priorities are. But usually the agencies, before they do that, take a look at the existing priorities and see if there's something they can build on within that set of priorities.
Okay. That's all for me.
We need a motion to
set these as our priorities.
I'll make that motion.
And I'll second it. Further discussion. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye. We have our priorities.
I had emailed just a synopsis of what the asset agency requests were for just Story County funding for fiscal year 14. And there's about a 33% increase in the request, and that's across all funding sources. So general basic, local option, mental health, and public health. And the public health dollars are the state dollars that run through the county for the Homeward health services. We do have a total of 31 agencies participating in the process for fiscal year 14. Three of them are brand new, Arley Ball, which we started contracting with this year as a replacement for the community mental health services, but this will be their first year through the entire asset process. HRDA stepped in to provide the transportation services, and then Salvation Army is brand new, and they're bringing to the table disaster services, payee services, and emergency rent and utility services. So those are the three new agencies. There is one agency that is not participating in the process, and that's Big Brothers and Big Sisters. We had new service requests, so requests that we have either not funded in the past or are brand new services, and that total is $19,700, so that's part of that $335,000, but almost $20,000 of that is just in new service requests. So typically what we talk about today before we go into the process is where we stand with general basic and local option dollars for the process. We currently have $454,000 in general basic dollars and $15,000 in local option that go into the process.
How is mental health going to change with the new system? What goes into asset?
For the purposes of fiscal year 14, I don't see a lot changing. A year from now, when we're sitting here and talking, it will have to change because in fiscal year 15, we'll have a regional board, and it will be the responsibility of that regional board to determine what services are covered under the core services that are outlined in the legislation, and then what dollars are available from the counties that are involved in that region. I still see asset as being a conduit. I think we could still use the asset process in helping to determine the recommendations for the services, at least here in Story County, and that then being communicated on to the regional board for a final decision. I think we'll be sitting better financially by having regional partners with the services that will need to be funded. But I still see asset being a player in that whole process.
And remind me what county funding of the asset process has looked like. As I recall, there were a few years there that there were no increases, and in the last couple, we've been able to dig out some small increases trying to keep pace with the other funders. And what they've done in the process. Can you just remind us of that?
Yep. You did a good job. We did, especially in the general basic fund, we had flat funded that, 3 or 4 years in a row. And then we started bringing local option dollars back into the process because agencies indicated they are serving people in the unincorporated areas. And we do have documentation of that as agencies draw those funds down. So we start bringing more of the local option dollars into the process and making small increases in that as well. The last 2 years, we have done a 2 to 3% increase for each fund, for general basic and for local option. If it were a 3% increase in general basic, that would be about $13,620. And in local option, it would be $450. A small increase.
Yeah, and Paul, I don't know where you are on this as we start to dig into the budget stuff. There's just not going to be a lot of wiggle room again this year. But for me, I want us to be committed to maintaining pace. I mean, if we're a partner with the city, with United Way, and with the Iowa State government in this, we need to do our share of partnership. But it just seems to me that looking at something like that 2 to 3% increase on the general basic is about all we're going to be able to get done this year. So that's not anywhere close to the 335 that's being requested. So I don't know how precise you need us to be at this point as you go forward.
A ballpark figure
yep.
would be helpful. What happens next then is in December, I take the dollars that are being looked at or being made available, and I put them into each of the panels. We have four panels in asset for services, and then that information is given to the volunteers in January so that when they're sitting down and making their recommendations, they have parameters that they can work within as they set those recommendations and get ready to bring those back to you. And I know this is always the challenge with the asset process because we're, as a county, we're just starting our budgeting process. Budgets are due a week from Friday. And then our work sessions are in January. So we try to dovetail it as best as possible, knowing that things can change as you look at the entire budgets of each department here in the county and what the needs are going to be and what the anticipated revenues are going to be for the county. So it's it is a little bit of a challenge.
Mm-hmm. I want to see us continue doing what we've done in the past, but like you said, this, you know, the 33%, I don't know how we're going to get there. I mean, I think if we say 3%, I think that's even at some point going to be questionable.
Well, but it's only, I absolutely agree with you. I'm talking about 3% of the general basic,
right,
which is a little less than half of what I don't know that we can do anything with local option sales tax because we don't know where those dollars are at this point. We sure can't do anything with mental health at this point until we sit down and go through the budget with you two here in a month and a half. And public health, Paul, you're going to know more about what's available there. But so I see three areas that we can't do anything, and we can't commit to anything in general basic, but I think 3% of that 454 as a target is a nice starting point, and then we're just going to have to figure it out as we go. And I don't know if you think that's being too aggressive or not. What'd you say 3% of the 454 is?
13,620.
Yeah. I guess I don't think it's too aggressive. I mean, it's something we can shoot for.
Yeah. So, I mean,
I think you're going to get a commitment out of the two of us this morning that we're going to be able to do the whole 3%, but...
But it helps set a parameter for the volunteers, knowing that when I come back with the recommendations the end of January, beginning of February, you'll have a little bit clearer idea of where things stand and whether the recommendations can stand or need to be changed.
I would suggest plugging a new $15,000 into the general basic as a target, knowing that that may not be where we're able to end up, but it's around... figure, and it gives us something in our mind as we start the budget process of what we're trying to do, whether we can get there or not. And so what do you need from us to go forward with that? Is that enough? Do we need
that recommendation? Right.
That's my recommendation, Paul. I don't know if you want to weigh in.
I'll agree with that.
The other thing I wanted to add in with the mental health is we've, with the legislation, there is a list of core services that regions are required to provide. And some of those core services are very specific, where others are pretty general, and we're not really sure what's supposed to fit under them. So keeping that in mind, one example of a pretty specific core service is home and vehicle modification. So if someone needs, you know, a chairlift in their home and they're not on Medicaid, you know, that's something we're going to have to provide funding for. That's not something that we've done before with just 100% county-funded dollars. That's always been something that people with Medicaid have been able to access because of that Medicaid source, but not necessarily people who aren't on Medicaid. And I'm not sure with the Affordable Health Care Act if those types of services will be covered under those expanded plans, if those are even offered in Iowa.
When do we start to see some clarity on the items that are really gray right now?
I would think this legislative session, you know, there still are a lot of rules around the transition and the legislation that still need to be developed. So I would think by July 1st we would have a better idea. And why I'm saying that is because one of the services that is being requested for county funding is payee services under Salvation Army. They're requesting $10,000 for these services. And that's not something we've been covering in the last 3 to 4 years because of our budget changes. But what we have been doing is we've been using other entities in the community to provide those services. And Kaylin is here today to give her report. But one of the things that RSVP does for us is they will find volunteers to act as payees then for people who need help budgeting. And so that's covered then through the volunteer services of RSVP. Now, that doesn't necessarily work for every client. The time that the client needs may be more demanding than what the volunteer has available. So then we go and we look for other alternatives for those services to be provided. But I'm cautious about funding a brand new service when we really don't know if it's going to fall within the core services that we're going to be required to cover, and we'll have a better idea, I would think, by July 1st.
But we've got to get through this asset process without knowing, but then we should know before we have this conversation next year, we're going to know better. And then don't want to get into the habit of singling out certain entities here, but I remain concerned about Red Cross and what's going on with Red Cross in Story County. And so I just want to encourage you to share that there are concerns as the asset process looks at it. I want to make sure Red Cross is an unbelievable organization and do great work, but we've lost a presence in Story County. And so I want to make sure that if we're funding Red Cross, that we're getting what we need here in Story County.
We do have funds allocated this current year to Red Cross for disaster services, and attempts have been made to get a contract signed, and we have not received a contract back. Therefore, they haven't been able to draw down any funds. So I'm not sure what that means. Yet, in the request for next year, they're requesting services for disaster as well, or funds for disaster as well as an additional request for health and safety education, which the county has funded in the past, but
we had a full-time health and education person in Story County, and we don't now. And so I just want us to be careful as we look at that.
All right. I agree.
Anything else for Deb? Deb, anything else for us?
Nope, that is it.
All right. Thank you very much.
15,000
As a target. Under the general. And I just, unless you tell me different, I don't believe we can do anything with the other three at this point.
I mean, public health, we don't, that's up to the state's determination as far as those dollars. And local option, we usually find it at the beginning of December what the anticipated revenues are. So, and that's a smaller amount of all of the dollars that are in the asset office from the county anyway. So, okay, thank you very
Thanks.
Much.
Thanks, absolutely. All right, consideration of revised plat of 1334, and Charlie, we'll let you tell us why we get to see Chuck again today. Chuck, not that we don't want to see you.
I'm sure he just loves to be here, so. As you'll recall, last week we, or the board, adopted Resolution 1322 approving the Oak subdivision plat. One change that needed to be made after that approval, the easement that we said was a public easement that connected Oak Crest Circle to Ada Hayden Park. The developer, Chuck, did not want that to be a public easement. It needed to be a private easement, so that change needed to be made on the plat. In talking with Jessica from the attorney's office, she thought it would be a good idea to bring this back forward and just get it on the record that it's not going to be a public easement, it's going to be a private easement, and then have the board adopt a new resolution stating that there was a change made to the original approval. So.
I wondered about that last week. I mean, having public access into what in essence is a private neighborhood, and if I recall right, even the roadway, we're not responsible for the roadway. The homeowner association is taking care of that, and so this makes more sense to me now than it did when it was public access going nowhere. So what do we need to do?
There's a new resolution that should have been included with the packet, and just adopt the new resolution, and that'll be affixed to the plat here when it's recorded.
And if we adopt this one, it automatically repeals the other one.
Yes.
Okay. So I will move approval of Resolution 1334.
Second. Further conversation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes. Chuck, we hope not to see you again for a while, man. Although, you can...
I may just want to say aye.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
The car just knows how to go. All right. Discussion and consideration of Story County Insurance Committee's recommendation. Alyssa.
Good morning.
Hi there.
We had an insurance committee meeting a week ago to discuss the two brokers, and we kind of had a pretty good discussion of what the services, what we want to do as far as health, disability, and stuff like that. We had a good discussion. The outcome of the meeting, the committee actually decided to recommend Benefit Source, and there were three primary reasons. The committee felt that Benefit Source was more forthcoming with answers at the presentation, so they were they had some pretty good insight there. Benefit Source did reach out after the presentation. I received an email and a phone call the next day after they kind of knew a little bit more of our situation. They did ask to submit a different fee structure without the medical in it, so that we could look, if we decided not to do any medical, we would know exactly what the fees were going to be. I did reach out to GBL. I called Nicole and gave them the opportunity to, because I wanted both of them to do that. Benefit Source did change their fee structure. They would not charge any amounts above the commissions that were set by the insurance provider. So for short-term, long-term life, those commissions are set by the insurance company, not necessarily by the broker, unless the broker wants to charge fees above and beyond the commissions. So those were the main three reasons. Both of them are pretty equal. Paul can probably agree with that. Both had really good references, very highly recommended from their clients. But that's what the insurance committee decided.
I kind of went into this thinking maybe we would be able to give some additional choices to some of our employees for health care coverage. And it just, at this point, doesn't look like that's going to happen. I mean, both of the companies set there here a few weeks ago and said, you know, if you've got 320 full-time employees and you've got less than 60 of those employees that are enrolled in your group health care plan, there probably isn't any provider out there that's going to be interested in looking at us. And you did say that we could do some, you know, we could do some work, they could do their due diligence to try to get us a quote, but that would involve every employee filling out a health care.
Yeah, I don't have any claims data. So it would take, it would be an application for each employee to fill out and get, which can be done if that's, you know, what the board, you know, and just to see what the quotes would be with, you know, but then you're not also not guaranteeing 312 aren't going to take the insurance. There will be quite a few that deny it because they have coverage elsewhere. I still want to look at some things. I think the committee kind of, with all the changes with healthcare reform coming in the next, you know, 2014 is a big year for that. We want to look at our options and do some research in it before we dive into anything as far as the medical insurance. And we're doing everything we can to keep our premiums as low as we can with the wellness options through ISAC.
And we did talk about taking a look at our short-term disability, whether or not we can self-fund that and actually save some money.
Yeah.
Probably can.
Yeah, well, I'd like to obviously go back a few more years, but we really haven't. I've been here almost 10 years, and we really haven't had many short-term claims. This year was probably the biggest one, and we would still have been quite a bit ahead if we would have self-insured on that.
Well, with employees, and how many years does it take an employee to get to his maximum?
About 6.67.
After 6 years, you've got 960 hours of
sick leave.
Any other products that are available, the additional life and the dental and the vision, that's all something that this provides.
Short-term is actually something that Story County provides. A lot of counties do not provide short-term because they do get a lot of sick leave. They just do the long-term and the life, so that is one benefit to working here. We do have that option. But there are a lot of different, dental. I would recommend taking the dental out for bid. We do have quite a few on there. We use Walmart. I get a bid from Delta Dental and look at some. There's no guarantee that we're going to switch short-term or long-term. If the rates come back higher than what we're currently paying, then I wouldn't recommend any changes.
All right. Further questions?
I'm good.
Action required?
I think we need to have a motion to accept Benefit Source as our broker of record, and I'll make that motion.
Second. Further discussion? Alyssa, anything else to add?
Nope. At this point, I will be in touch with Benefit Source, and we'll work out. You know, there's no guarantee. You know, they did submit their fees, but just by choosing them does not, you know,
there may not,
it's not a con- there might not be anything. There might, you know, yeah.
Hearing no further conversation, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
It Benefit Source is our new provider. Thanks, Alyssa. Agency reports, Kaylin Peterson from RSVP. Hi, Kaylin. How are you?
Great, thanks. How are you?
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for Well, again, thanks for the opportunity to share a little bit of information about RSVP, and I have given you a copy of our annual report from last fiscal year. And, of course, on the front it features the three main services that we provide here in Story County. One is the management of volunteers that are 55 and older. The second is volunteer management for disaster. That's a contract between the City of Ames and Story County Emergency Management, where we have volunteers that are trained to staff volunteer intake and a non-emergency phone bank in the event of a disaster where large numbers of community volunteers would be mobilized. And then effective in January 2010, a volunteer driver transportation program. Some of the highlights, well, first a low light. In July 1st, 2011, effective at that time, we received a 20% cut in our federal funding, which amounted to just under $20,000. We tried to apply those cuts to the best of our ability without hurting services, and we did have to reduce staff. We had to eliminate some of our office space in Ames and personnel benefits and certain other ways that we tried to look at it without, hopefully, you know, reducing services to the extent that we could. But then we found out in September that we had an opportunity to apply for a federal competitive grant that the Corporation for National and Community Service, which awards our federal funding, there were several projects across the country that relinquished their projects and relinquished their federal funding when the 20% cuts hit. So because they had really a lot larger response to that than they thought in terms of programs that closed, they had some money that they recompeted. And we were very fortunate that we were awarded a one-time federal disaster grant in the amount of $50,000. They awarded two grants in the country. One was for a project that was addressing veterans and veterans' families, and then the second was to disaster. And so we were very fortunate that we got that grant. That did allow us to bring staff hours for 11, 12, anyway, back up to where they were at. We were also able to purchase items that we would not have been able to otherwise have, and we tried to think of things that would be able to assist the program long-term and not just put fires out. So we were able to buy a copier for our Ames office, which we didn't have. We were able to update computers. We were able to do some things with technology that we wouldn't have been able to do, one of them being that we contracted to get our website updated. So now our website is such that volunteers can literally go online, put information in the fields, and then submit their applications electronically. We were able to restore our office space that we lost in Ames, which we used for doing trainings and orientation. We were able to buy items for the disaster education team that we developed through this grant and do a lot of other really great things. So that was like sort of like manna, actually, after receiving the 20% cut. that grant was actually from October 1st through September 30th, so some of that was carried over, and it's indicated on the back that we did carry some of that over for the first 3 months of this fiscal year. On the inside, the part that I like the best features and outlines the outcomes of the activities of our volunteers, and these are really truly the outcomes of the volunteers. This is a culmination of all of the things that they've been doing during the last fiscal year. And one of the programs that's really grown, and I know Deb talked about this, but transportation, and we've seen a dramatic increase in the usage of that program and also in the numbers of clients we have registered with that program. With the transportation program that we do ask that the people that are going to utilize that service that they submit a client application, And then we also try to limit the trips to what we call essential services, which primarily are medical appointments. Probably 90 to 95% of the trips we do are medical, dental, but also trips to the pharmacy, trips to the grocery store, and if we can get volunteers, even trips to hair appointments, because, you know, if you're 85, that is an essential service once a week. So we do some of that. We have currently, I think we've got 42 now, RSVP volunteer drivers that are registered. We have about 120 clients that are registered, even though not all of them have accessed the service. But for some of them, we're really just kind of a backup to their existing support system. And then we have others that utilize it on a very regular basis. So it's been a really great year in terms of, I think, what the volunteers have accomplished. It's been a bittersweet year in terms of funding. The federal funding cut did continue, so effective July 1st of 2012, we were level funded at the previous year's funding, which, again, is with that 20% cut. So that was not restored, but we've really tried to find ways to implement those cuts without, again, impacting services to the extent that we can.
Well, and the carryover from the federal disaster grant should
first
help
3 months.
For this.
Absolutely. This yep, it did. And then the other big thing that happened, and this will start July, this actually started July 1st, was we were awarded a federal grant to expand geographically. And so when the federal funding cuts hit, there were 5 projects in the state of Iowa over a period of that first year that closed their doors. And one of them was the project in Webster City, and the other one was a project in Fort Dodge. And they did recompete some of that funding, and one of the criteria was that it had to be competed by an RSVP project that was in a position to expand geographically. In other words, and it had to be to areas that had been previously served. So we were really the project that was in the best position to write that grant for those expansion dollars. And how that impacts Story County, in a sense, is that, I guess in a good way, is that now a portion of my salary and a portion of our administrative assistant salary, and even another one of our coordinators who does all of our volunteer data entry, that, you know, I mean, that does sort of soften the blow a little bit on our budget here because of the personnel costs that are being redirected. So I've been joking around that I got to quit writing grants because I keep giving myself a 10-hour week raise. But really, I think that's going to be a good thing. I think that the intent was originally and is that it's a more cost-effective way for programs to run, is that if you have one project, we have a coordinator in Fort Dodge, we have a coordinator in Webster City that really manage a lot of the volunteer activity. There's one grant instead of 3 or 4. You know, there's all of the federal reporting. There's only one set of those reports instead of 3 or 4. So really, it's been a challenge, but I think it's going to be a good thing ultimately for our program. So, again, I thank you for the opportunity to come and share our annual report and would be glad to ask or address any questions.
Your asset request for this year is similar to what it was?
Yep. It's, yes. I mean, there's a small increase in what we asked for from asset, but.
That's all I had.
I'm good.
You're good?
Thank you very
okay.
much.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank
very
you.
Much. Shirley Faircloth from Juvenile Justice. Hey, Shirley. Thank you very much.
You.
I always appreciate the opportunity to come and update the board, so thank you for having me. As usual, for my report, I always like to start out with the budget, and one of the things that I do want to bring to your attention that the expenses in the line item for protective living costs have increased this year, and that fund pays for court-ordered detention and the county share of court-ordered shelter care in shelters other than Rosedale. And this item has increased, and it's extremely hard to predict. Obviously, we're not aware of what type of clients or charges may be coming before us, in addition to waiting lists for clients who are pending placement into residential treatment facilities. We do need to use some shelters outside of Rosedale, whether it be that we have co-defendants or we may have a defendant and a victim, and so we need to look at other placements. The other time we look at other shelters than Rosedale is if we can start a client into treatment quicker, we'll place them in that shelter that's connected with that residential treatment facility. The other things that have impacted detention costs is Magellan is now reviewing placements that are court ordered, and we have seen in Story County a couple of cases where we needed a secure PMIC facility, which there are none in the state of Iowa.
Tell me PMIC. What is that?
More of a psychiatric. Okay. I should have it. A psychiatric. Can you help me out, Deb?
Psychiatric Medical Institution for Children.
Thank you. We use all our acronyms.
Yeah, that could be a test question. So.
Okay, first test.
What's the closest PMIC facility?
Or a secure facility, there are none in the state of Iowa. We do have some in Des Moines, Orchard Place. We also use Jackson Recovery. Brimwood in Waverly has one. So there are approximately nine PMIC facilities in the state of Iowa. And Beloit in Des Moines. Yep. Some of the clients that have had longer waiting stays in detention recently have been Department of Human Services clients and then have picked up new charges while at shelter. So we have met with the County Attorney's Office and Department of Human Services to help staff those clients on a more routine basis. The medical costs while they're in detention, the Title 19 coverage is not valid, and so the county picks up those costs. So we've had over $10,000 in medical costs, so it's certainly a significant cost to the county, and we'll continue to coordinate and staff those cases. In addition, Judge Owen is aware of this, and he has been reviewing some of those cases on a weekly basis if needed in order and subpoenaing individuals from Magellan staff to help proceed or try to expedite those services. So that is something that is being addressed, and we will continue to monitor from our end. The legislature has recommended reduction in shelter care, and there were some shelters that were closed last year. That the impact that we have seen on that directly in Story County is that Rosedale typically has more out-of-county clients in it than Story County clients at this point. And there have been occasions where there were no beds available for Story County clients, and then that has increased the cost to the county when we have to look for a shelter in another district.
How many beds do we currently fund at Rosedale? Don't we fund like two beds at Rosedale? And I'm looking more at Gayla and Deb.
We have some what we call voluntary or community placements so that we are secure, and they've guaranteed some beds for those community placements. Yes.
Okay.
The contract with Verizon for the judge's on-call phone has been terminated. At this time, Judge Owen is using his personal phone, and that has become a personal expense. I do have the phone, though, which is in good condition, and not sure who I should turn that over to, because that would be a county's phone in the event that you would need an extra phone.
That's a good question.
Alyssa? Yeah, but okay. So we've got one now that's just sitting there. Shirley, can we ask that phone go to Gayla?
Yes.
Thank you.
Work with you afterwards and get it to you.
We're not going to activate it for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It might be better than some of the ones you have. Story County continues to utilize the Skype for court hearings, and this was a project funded out of actually Marshall and Hardin County DCAT funds, but it certainly has reduced the cost to the county as far as court-ordered transportation costs, and we'll continue to utilize that. Radnor Day Treatment Program, which is located in La Grande, was closed on November 9th. So this is a service that was underutilized and was not cost effective to remain open. However, you know, the sad part is it does create that gap in treatment that typically the clients that were in the day treatment program were clients who had been unsuccessful in community programs and need a little extra structure and was a step before we looked at a residential treatment facility. Caitlin Hofeld was hired to replace Ann Lundville, and she started in July of 2012, and she is the coordinator for Story County DCAT and Empowerment, the early childhood Iowa area, and is doing very well, and the employer of record for Caitlin is Central Iowa Juvenile Detention Center. Story County continues to support many prevention programs, and as Deb mentioned earlier, we're in the process of working on our budget. Also, a lot of the prevention programs and services are funded from ASSET, and so we are in the process of trying to negotiate what type of increase we may be looking at. In the past, we've looked at 2-3% increase for those programs that the board helps support. And then the attached pages are just a general overview. I won't go through any of those, but just juvenile justice in Iowa, how there have been changes in the last several years. I've updated the complaints that we've received from Story County since my last report to the board. And then the last two pages in color are just graphs from charges, doing a comparison of the number of charges from 2008 through 2011 and the types of charges, and then also broken down by age, gender, and race.
I don't have anything else for Shirley. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Shirley, always nice to see you.
All right, departmental reports, none. Other reports. Other reports, no. Liaison assignments, anything? I don't have anything. Public forum two. This is the opportunity for members of the public to make comments on items not on this agenda. We can't take any action on that today, but it may be referred to a future agenda. Is there anyone who would like to address the board? Seeing no one moving immediately to the microphone, announcements from the supervisors, pass.
Wayne's gone this week for ISAC, and you and I will be hit and miss.
Next 2 days. All right. Consideration from council. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. I'm requesting that the board move to go into closed session to discuss pending litigation.
Would move that we move into closed session to discuss pending litigation.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
You have to take a
roll call vote.
Roll
call vote. Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Clinton. Absent. We are now in closed session. We're going to closed session.